Mayor Bauman mentioned a phrase that stuck in my mind. She said that in other places the police forces do things to the people, but here in Madison the police force works with the people. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit, some details about what you've done in the south side of town to work with the people.
Yeah, I think that in terms of working with people rather than against them or working beyond them, David Cooper actually has to get a lot of credit for demystifying the whole policing mystique, because I think that people have a tendency to see us in only one role, and that is using force and making arrests. And I think that we have learned over time that the same neighbors that we're responding to calls to, we see them over and over and over again. I would want that person to understand what I'm doing and have me understand what he or she is doing, but to know that we're neighbors, that we're going to be, this is not a one-time occurrence, it's going to be a partnership that goes over and over and over again, and we want that to be positive. And one of the ways you do that is that rather than being an occupying force, you actually put your roots in the community, you stay in the community, and you become a part of the community. So you begin to understand it a little bit more, and it begins to understand you, and I think that's happening.
So in a study released on April 10th, Wisconsin ended up with the worst incarceration rate in the nation for African Americans, and Dane County's numbers are actually even worse. Blacks are incarcerated more often than statewide, and whites are incarcerated less often than statewide. Are African Americans the main crime-committing population in Madison?
No, I don't think that's true. I think if you separate out the reality of that report, it really talked about drug offenses, having African-American males leading the way for incarceration. So African-Americans, I don't believe, commit any more crimes than any other racial or ethnic group. But I think that when you are faced with the struggle in poor areas where most people of color typically live, those areas are certainly a lot more vulnerable than other areas, because people in other areas that more affluent know how to call the police, they know how to bring pressure to bear on situations in the neighborhood that they don't like. I think when you have less affluent neighborhoods, it takes more effort to do that. And consequently, people come to the area just like they do at Cypress and at Magnolia to sell drugs, and other people come to buy drugs at Cypress and Magnolia. And somebody, as you heard the Borough Oaks president say, somebody's got to say stop it. And you do that by coming together as a group, whether you're the police or you're the mayor and the community or the fire department, whatever the case may be, somebody's got to say stop it. And I think when that doesn't happen, we come in and say, hey, arrest is the only way to bring safety to the community. And I think what you're seeing as a result of that one kind of way that's been determined to be used is partially a result of the number of incarcerations that are happening. But this answer is complex. It isn't just making arrests. It's the whole notion of what the community is and who values the community. If you have a person who comes to sell drugs, then obviously they don't value the community. If you have a person who comes to buy drugs, they don't value this community. So who then values the community? Whoever it is has to stand up and say enough is enough, and then further look at the notion of redefining what law enforcement does in terms of the kinds of crimes that get African-American men incarcerated. And I think we're right on the cusp of being able to do that, because you, number one, have to bring attention to the fact that something is wrong first, and then you have to make a commitment to try to do something about it. So I think we have recognized that something needs to happen beyond what we're doing now.
And what kind of steps is the Madison Police Department taking to actually record data and statistics about racial profiling, which in most cases has been shown to be unfairly applied to people of color?
Well, you and I would disagree about that, because I think if you look at the interaction between people, period, I've had Latinos, I've had Asians, Hmongs, I've had African Americans, I've had whites, I've had students who come to me and complain about racial profiling, especially as it relates to using a vehicle or being in a neighborhood. What the Mayor's Task Force on Race said to us as a recommendation is that we know that you're writing citations about people who are violating traffic laws, but we don't know about the number of stops that you're making where no traffic tickets were issued. So we will be unveiling at the May Public Safety Review Board a report for this year that does 2001 that documents the number of stops that have been made where no traffic tickets have been issued. So that answers the question. But what I would say to me that's most important is that we work and define this issue together versus having a person come and say, you are racially profiling. I spent a year on the governor's task force on race. Countless numbers of meetings trying to define what racial profiling is. When do the police have an obligation or a right to contact you, and when is it that they don't? And it is a very, very complex issue as seen through the eyes of a person. If you are being stopped and you think it's unreasonable, even though you may have gone over the speed limit, the racial card gets played so often. Well, if I were white, I wouldn't have had this happen. If I were rich, I wouldn't have had it happen. If I were, if I were some other kind of racial or ethnic group, it wouldn't have happened to me. Well, part of the thing that the mayor's task force on race did was it did establish dialogue, which is something that in this city, as far as I knew since I've been here, had never been done before. So that to me was kind of it's a step in the right direction. I mean, this is a journey. It's not a destination. So people need to start talking and understand that there are issues on both sides. There are people who are, for example, not adhering to having driver's licenses and whatnot. And there are police officers who perhaps are looking at them and saying, I'm going to give a ticket because it's a violation of the law, as opposed to saying, I'll give you an opportunity to go do something, because we do have the right to do that. So the answer then is really complex, but it's like somewhere in between all the rhetoric that's being done. The answer is kind of somewhere in between. And if we don't dialogue about what's important to the community, then we're never going to reach the states where we're really trying to get to. So that's the most important thing for me right now.
And at the May 7th meeting, when you unveil the statistics, will there be an opportunity to get feedback from the communities of color who feel that racial profiling does exist?
Well, now keep in mind that this only deals with one part of the recommendations that the mayor's task force made, and that was documenting the number of times that people have stopped of all people who had not been given traffic citations. So this is certainly not going to answer every question that everybody has. This is the commitment that we made that was a real struggle for us to get the instruments to do this. We got it, and we're presenting the information. So we'll see. I'm saying, think about dialogue. That's really what we're trying to get to.
Yeah, that was kind of what the question was about, if there was an opportunity for the information to flow back the other way, because...
Well, in the times that we've gone out and tried to solicit input, I think that whether it's the morning, the afternoon, or the evening, it's not a very good venue. The venue we've been using is not a very good venue. I don't know how you do this, but I know that we have to perfect what we're doing, because people simply won't come in and they won't say, hey, this is what happened to me. The other thing it is the mixture of people who come in and say, well, I was stopped because I was driving a Cadillac. And I asked the question, well, were you speeding? Did you do a stop sign? Well, yeah, I did, but the attention that was drawn to me was because I was driving a Cadillac or a Mercedes or whatever, a new car. On the other hand, officers have said, look, let's go down 602 football fields, and I'll let you stand here with me, and you tell me if you can tell the race or the sex of the person who's in that car. Now, they pass a point, and we got a speed situation there where the laser radar is indicating that person is speeding. I hope that nobody's sitting saying, well, I'm going to let this person go because they're white. I'm going to let this person go because they're a woman. They look and they see a car and a driver where the speeding going on is being determined or identified by a laser radar. The responsibility is to stop that car and make contact, make a decision about whether or not a ticket is going to be written. So there's this discussion about, well, I'm being stopped because I'm black, or I'm Latino, or I'm a whatever, and I would offer you, come with me and let's just stake out 200 yards on Park Street and let you look with me, because we're not using binoculars. Let you look with me and see if you can determine the race or the ethnicity of the person who's driving the car. I have not been able to do it.